This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the U.S. House of Representatives votes to approve rules for the impeachment inquiry into President Donald J. Trump as it heads into a more public phase. At the heart of this inquiry, which officially began on September 24, when House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced it, is a July 25th phone call between U.S. President Donald Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. The phone call was so alarming to many senior career national security officials familiar with the contents that it prompted a whistleblower complaint. This complaint, the substance of which several current and former senior U.S. officials corroborated in testimonies to House impeachment investigators, reveals a pressure campaign by President Trump toward Kiev. Mr. Trump allegedly sought to withhold almost $400 million in critical military assistance to Ukraine, which is under siege by Russia, until Ukraine's leader Zelensky promised to conduct investigations into Trump's 2020 main political rival, former Vice President Joe Biden, as well as his son Hunter, and to state so publicly. Federal law expressly states that it is illegal for a person to solicit, accept, or receive anything of value from a foreign national in connection with U.S. elections. The White House released a rough transcript of the phone call, although important references are missing, according to a key witness, which President Trump said was, quote, perfect and totally appropriate. But the fact that White House officials ordered information about President Trump's phone call with President Zelensky be removed from a classified server that typically stores such records to a hyper-secure server, normally reserved for material of the gravest sensitivity, which this was not, calls into question Trump's innocuous characterization. His acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, blurted out in a recent White House press briefing that the call did involve a so-called quid pro quo, U.S. military aid in exchange for the political investigations, and told the press to, quote, get over it. However, recent closed-door testimonies, which may likely become public in light of the vote to open up impeachment proceedings, of current U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Bill Taylor and former Senior Director for European and Russian Affairs on the National Security Council, or NSC, Fiona Hill, raised alarms on two fronts. These officials were concerned about conditioning U.S. aid to Ukraine on Kiev's willingness to help President Trump with a political favor. They were also disturbed by an unofficial diplomatic track, a shadow foreign policy, if you will, being run by Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, involving individuals who do not normally cover Ukraine policy, such as Energy Secretary Rick Perry and U.S. Ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland. This unofficial diplomatic track succeeded in ousting longstanding career diplomat Maria Yovanovitch, U.S. ambassador to Ukraine until May 2019, when President Trump abruptly recalled her from her post following claims by Trump's surrogates that she was undermining Trump's efforts to pressure Ukraine to investigate his political rival, former Vice President Joe Biden. Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman, the top Ukraine official on the NSC and the only witness so far who actually listened to the July 25th phone call between Trump and Zelensky firsthand, told investigators that what he heard on the phone call was, quote, inappropriate and would undermine U.S. national security, unquote. Despite his impeccable credentials as a scholar, Iraq War veteran, and Purple Heart recipient, President Trump disparaged him as a, quote, never-Trumper. However, Colonel Vindman refuted this false characterization by conveying through his patriotic and dignified demeanor and his testimony that by reporting his concerns to the NSC legal counsel, he was, quote, acting out of a sense of duty. He said, quote, I am a patriot, and it is my sacred honor to advance and defend our country, irrespective of party or politics, unquote. Well, joining us to discuss the nexus between the impeachment inquiry, Ukraine, and U.S. national security are P.J. Crowley. He's former Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs and former colonel in the U.S. Air Force, who has served in numerous other senior national security positions. And Mark Simakovsky. He's a senior fellow in the Eurasia Center at the Atlantic Council. That's a policy group based here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
So, PJ, let me begin with you. I'd like to get your take quickly on this public phase of the impeachment inquiry. Now we have a vote, primarily along party lines. Now we're going to open the proceedings to the public. Mr. Trump never denied he made that infamous phone call on July 25th, the rough transcript of which we have. Nonetheless, you know, he has been, and the White House have been stonewalling, have disparaged the whole impeachment inquiry. How do you see this vote and its significance?
It is significant, and I think it is vitally important that the proceedings move from the evidence collection stage, if you will, to a public phase where the American people and others can begin to understand the context of what the House of Representatives is investigating. I served on the National Security Council staff during the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And I think, fortunately for Bill Clinton, it was a world without Twitter. And so despite his domestic political challenges at home, Clinton used foreign policy, the challenges in Bosnia, Kosovo, Iraq, pursuing peace in Northern Ireland and the Middle East. He was able to use foreign policy to convey to the American people that notwithstanding impeachment, I'm continuing to do my job. I think, unfortunately for President Trump, in this age of Twitter and cable news, you're beginning to see a White House that is obsessed with the impeachment inquiry. But this will all play out in front of the American people.
Well, Mark Szymanski, the White House may be obsessed with the impeachment inquiry, but some would argue that if the White House had not stonewalled on simple requests for documents and witnesses in the aftermath of the Robert Mueller probe into Russia's interference in the 2016 elections and not characterized this impeachment inquiry or the fact that the Congress has the absolute duty to conduct oversight, that perhaps we wouldn't be where we are today. The Congress is a co-equal branch of government, and one of their duties is to conduct oversight. So quickly, your take on the significance of this vote.
You know, this vote is clearly significant in that it brings the investigation into the public realm, which the Speaker has been pressured to do. Of course, the Speaker has been resistant into conducting impeachment hearings until this Ukraine crisis, in a way, fell into the House's lap. This was not something that was neither asked for nor generated by anyone other than the President of the United States. So in many ways, there was, I believe, a requirement to move forward. And as more witnesses have been called and as more information has come to light corroborating how this Ukraine investigation and the president's actions were detrimental to U.S. national security, and potentially people around the president have also lied about the role that the president has played and the rationale for the decision, I think has only fueled the need for continuing to conduct this investigation and conduct it in a way that will provide the American people the ability to have full transparency into the investigation. So I do think it's critical, but I also think that there's going to continue to be new areas of information that are going to surprise many people and potentially new witnesses that will likely continue to accelerate the reality that the House will most likely impeach the president this year.
Turning back to you, PJ Crowley, let's go back to that fateful phone call on July 25th. As you said, you served on the National Security Council. You have been a public official. You are a retired military officer. How do you see this phone call that still President Trump says was perfect? He doesn't see any problem with the quid pro quo. And the fact that this call was then placed on a super secure server, career officials were sidelined. I mean, how does it strike you?
What I blink about, and I blink a lot when I observe what's happening at the White House these days, is a foreign policy that is unmoored, if you will, from a thoughtful national security process. You know, under Republican and Democratic administrations, going back to the first Bush administration, the National Security Advisor, Brent Scowcroft, invented what is called the principles process. You start with, you know, policy coordinating committees, work up to so-called deputies of national security agencies, up to the principals who lead those agencies, the Secretary of Defense, State, and so on. And their job is to formulate foreign policy. They make decisions where they can in the national interest. And in those tough calls, they tee up options for the president. You know, this is a White House that doesn't have a strong, effective national security process. And so this is where, as Bill Taylor described in his testimony, you've got an official policy and an official channel and an irregular channel that seems to be taking actions that are contrary to that policy and that national interest. When I was at the White House, I would routinely listen to presidential phone calls. Vladimir Putin as a brand new, you know, president of the Russian Federation, other leaders. And what was important there was that when the president talked to a president or a prime minister or a king, it was important for the so-called interagency to understand what they talked about, what they committed to do together. That's the purpose for a record. This White House has decided to restrict information on who the president talks to, what they talk about, and this is an extreme case of that. And that means you've got a foreign policy that is less informed, more impulsive, not necessarily guided by longstanding bipartisan national interests.
Turning to you, Mark, for your take on this phone call, particularly from the Ukrainian perspective. You know, you have a new president, Zelensky. He was elected to continue to rid the country of corruption. And now we have what some experts say, by virtue of the phone call, something that sounded like an old-fashioned type of shakedown. You know, I'll give you this aid, which was deliberately placed on hold by the president. We have many witnesses who said that. It was placed on hold, which in and of itself is suspicious. And then he says, I'd like you to do a favor, though. In other words, he asks, that is, Zelensky would like to know when the missiles are coming, and then president. So how do you see Zelensky's position? Talk about his vulnerability as someone, a newly elected president, not wanting to be on the wrong side of their benefactor. How are they reacting?
So from Ukraine's perspective, they're at a very vulnerable time in their modern history. They're occupied by the Russian Federation. There's a new Ukrainian president that has committed to his population that he's going to pursue corruption and advance Ukraine's fight against corruption, while also in parallel trying to make a path towards peace with the Russian Federation. So usually when Ukraine conducts such a difficult environment, it needs its partners at its side. And the United States, for the last 20 years, has been by Ukraine's side on a bipartisan basis. So the credibility and the consistency that Ukraine usually expects from the United States is lacking from this administration because President Trump, frankly speaking, had no interest in battling corruption anywhere in the world. There is no pillar of U.S. policy in the Trump administration that has focused on corruption being a major issue that the White House has cared about. All of a sudden, the president makes a contingent that for Ukraine to have the United States as a partner, it needs to not only battle corruption, but battle it against the president's potential political enemies. And so I think the Ukrainians' perspective is they are questioning the credibility of the United States in actually being interested in corruption, which will thereby undermine Ukraine's willingness to fight corruption if it thinks that its partner is really not very interested in corruption at all, but just interested in using an investigation to undermine the president's enemies. I think one thing that PJ said, though, is critical, and also how Ukraine is able to navigate this in terms of consistency, is an unmooring of process. There also has been an unmooring of the national interest here in the United States. The president is pursuing a policy that is simply serving his own personal interests, and that policy is divorced from the normal policy process that brings together ideas about how the United States should deal with a certain country, and also the security assistance package that the White House and the Pentagon developed together was done months before this decision. And so from the Ukrainians' perspective, they're confused, they're feeling increasingly isolated, and again, they will be increasingly able to be influenced by Russia's pressure campaign when they see themselves essentially divorced from a U.S. partner that has been critical in providing Ukraine the kind of support that it needs to keep its independence.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are P.J. Crowley, former Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs, and he also served on the National Security Council. And Mark Simakovsky, from whom you just heard. He's Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center. We're discussing the impeachment inquiry into President Trump's alleged abuse of power as it relates to U.S. ally Ukraine and national security. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Well, here's a shout out to Olubisi Adeola from Wari, Nigeria. Now, if you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter at voanews.com, or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, P.J. Crowley, to talk about the fact that the foreign policy has become, as you said, unmoored from a thoughtful U.S. process. We have now what is considered a sort of a shadow foreign policy, a parallel track run by Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, involving the U.S. ambassador to the EU, who also presented testimony. Some people think he may have presented some false testimony. What is your take on this and the sidelining of career officials knowledgeable about the region and about the credibility of our foreign policy and the importance of national security, Marie Yovanovitch? I'd like to get your take on that and the fact that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo appears to be sort of abandoning these career officials. He allowed Yovanovitch to be recalled to empower this non-official track, which has a political agenda.
I think it's important to understand, by my count, we've had 15 high-level officials involved so far in testimony, you know, 14 within the context of the impeachment inquiry, you know, one John Sullivan, the Deputy Secretary of State, who's being nominated to be the U.S. ambassador to Russia. Obviously, he appeared in a public testimony. But for the most part, these are career officials. They've served both Democratic presidents and Republican presidents. They are steeped in and supportive of a long-term bipartisan policy with regard to Ukraine. Then they see these valid U.S. national interests being undermined, you know, by the irregular or informal channel apparently led by Rudy Giuliani. But I think to build up for a moment on what Mark just said, one piece of the favor that President Trump asked of President Zelensky, you know, was an investigation of the Bidens. The other piece was to go back and try to revisit history, you know, with respect to CrowdStrike and alleged Ukrainian influence in the 2016 election. And I think this again brings back into sharp relief the blind spot that President Trump has had throughout his presidency about Russia. You know, in the abstract, sure, we want a constructive relationship with Russia, but he has ignored history of the last 20 years with Vladimir Putin as president of Russia, to where the areas of common interest between the United States and Russia are shrinking, the areas of conflict are expanding. And here, you know, in Helsinki, where he said, I see as an equivalence what the U.S. intelligence community said, that Russia attacked the United States, and President Putin, who said, we didn't do it. You know, and he
sided with Putin.
He did. And so he has latched on to this very strange conspiracy theory that wasn't Russia, it wasn't Ukraine. And as both Bill Taylor and Marie Yovanovitch said, the only person who benefits from this entire process is Vladimir Putin. Last time I checked, if Putin's happy, this is not good for the United States.
Absolutely. But there's a pattern here, isn't there, Mark Samakovsky? You were at these microphones right after the Mueller probe ended. And it's clear, it's unequivocal, that Russia interfered in the U.S. election and did so in a sweeping and systematic fashion. And then there's other elements that maybe don't rise to a criminal conspiracy, but so many interactions between the Trump campaign and Russian officials and the disinformation campaign that the Russians engaged in to sow chaos, sow discord among the American electorate. So speaking of which, we now have, as PJ mentioned, the request for Ukraine, in addition to investigating Biden, that's a political opponent, and that right there is a red flag, to investigate conspiracy theories that have already been debunked, that somehow it wasn't Russia, after all the Mueller investigation showed it was Russia. I mean, why this insistence? And then we have the Justice Department turning the probe into the origins of the Russia investigation into a criminal inquiry. It seems very odd to the person who's reading and trying to get a handle on what is really going on in this administration. Why are they latching on to these conspiracy theories?
You know, I think you made the exact right connection of where this was generated. And it was generated as a result from the president and the president's team's perspective of a successful conclusion of the Mueller investigation. So the president's attorney, Mr. Giuliani, essentially went from the defensive to defend the president surrounding the Mueller investigation, which from the president's perspective was concluded successfully, to the offensive. And the offensive element of this strategy was to go out into the world and find countries and or pieces of information that would help and facilitate the president's election in 2020. The primary target of that offensive campaign was Ukraine, because Ukraine, the president believed, had information that could benefit his campaign. And that, of course, is as a result of the former vice president's son being on a board of Burisma, an energy company that faced multiple rounds of investigation. Even though the president's son, there was never and has never been any evidence of any wrongdoing. There was never anything illegal about it. But the main issue is Giuliani found what he perceived as a vulnerable candidate to pressure. And the United States had tools to pressure Ukraine, primarily through an assistance package that everyone in the U.S. government had supported. And of course, what you started to see were casualties along that pressure. So a U.S. ambassador that wasn't agreeing with Giuliani. I think the main issue, though, is because the president has these associates that are looking for political dirt, essentially interfering in U.S. foreign policy, that's where this administration got themselves in trouble, because there's a whole cohort of professionals managing U.S. policy toward Ukraine that started to see an invasion of this professional foreign policy discourse by those that are essentially political operatives. And those operatives, you're also seeing some of them arrested in Florida because they clearly were seeking to get dirt on Vice President Biden while also engaging in their own nefarious personal financial connections.
And of course, you're referring to Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, I believe.
That's correct.
Both Ukrainian-born with very shady backgrounds. And they were illegally funneling money to pro-Trump election committee and other Republican politicians. And they were arrested in Dulles Airport.
That's correct. And there's a quid pro quo there as well, where you have, almost in desperation, Giuliani trying to find fixers that would help facilitate his investigation. He was essentially stopped at the door of the U.S. Embassy when the U.S. Embassy wouldn't play ball with his demands, and that's why you saw Masha Yovanovitch fired. I think he was frustrated with other U.S. government officials facilitating access, frustration with not being able to facilitate the president's ambitions. So he turned to these shady characters who just happened to speak Ukrainian and have worked with Giuliani in the past to find ways to get access and information. And as a result, I think these characters had their own interests, but also the question is who was backing them. And a lot of this goes back to an individual, Dmytro Firtash, who's a Ukrainian who has run significant Russian-Ukrainian energy deals and alleged funneled money to President Trump through these individuals as a way to get into the administration's own good graces and prevent his own extradition to the United States, where he's wanted on several charges.
Very interesting and complicated. But as we close, P.J. Crowley, we will see how the impeachment inquiry plays out. But the Republicans have actually tried to disparage the inquiry. And I guess also the denigration of Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman, the top Ukraine official on the National Security Council. He is a refugee from Ukraine. He's a patriot. He became a veteran. We heard some people disparaging him. How do you see the Republican response? Is it tenable going forward?
It's a split screen. The accusations that he's a double agent are abhorrent. I am encouraged that some Republicans and Democrats as well have come to Colonel Vindman's defense, saying this is going, you know, way too far. Obviously, the impeachment inquiry is unfolding in the context of partisan politics in the United States. I think I would just bring people back to a bigger picture, that this is representative of the tragedy of the Trump administration, the president's inability to process what happened in 2016, his concern that Russian interference somehow
undermines
the legitimacy of his election. He could very easily have said, look, it's impossible to know what the impact was, but clearly Russia attacked us, and he could have made election security and Russian accountability pillars of his foreign policy. That's not the course he chose. He chose, as we saw in Helsinki, to back Putin over his intelligence community. And what's happened with Ukraine is just another representation of this blind spot that he seems to have towards Russia, where he just can't see not only the reality of what Russia has done, but the practical limitations of our ability to cooperate with Russia going forward.
And on that note, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Mark Simakovsky, Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center, and P.J. Crowley, former Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guests. Our engineer was Wojtech Zorniak. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.